We gotta melt away. You know?
Mm-hmm. We gotta melt away. That would be good.
We gotta obliviate the performance. We gotta go back to one.
All right.
And just be in the car. We might have to. Okay.
Yeah.
We might have to. I have an idea here. What have you gotten up to this morning?
This morning?
Yeah.
Taking care of four dogs right now, so I started by getting them all fed. They each eat different food. So.
Yeah.
They all need their own situation and medications. And then I was doing some editing for my podcast for a little while I put some YouTube on and kind of alternated between that. And then I got a text from you saying, hey, you want to record anything? It actually said, hey, Kevin.
Did it say, hey, Kevin?
Yeah, it said, hey, Kevin, comma, I'm at, or it's
oh,
at a
comma,
town.
Yeah. When I'm dictating to
hey,
Siri,
Kevin, comma, can't do the show today.
Yeah, we'll get into that.
So I guess you can't do the show today, and I'm Kevin.
When I'm dictating to Siri, and it adds punctuation, I just, like, one time I looked at Siri, and I found out that it had punctuation, and I was horrified to, like, think about what had happened in the past before my realization.
It does say every time it says sent with Siri.
Right, yeah.
So it's that saving. You know, there have definitely been times where it'll be like sent with Siri, and then I'm like, okay, let me sound this out and see what it actually was supposed to mean.
Yeah.
And I can usually get there.
Okay, yeah. But we're gonna hop out of the car real quick. I mean, we're gonna stretch.
Okay.
It'll just be a second.
All right.
Just stretch real quick.
All right, that was good.
You live here, but you see the fucking mountain, and
oh, very foggy.
But it burned. It all burned. So, like, does it look way different to me? I can't really conjure the image of what it used to look like, you know. But does it look way different than you remember? Or are you
not really? Because it's like, I don't know, it burned in this line, but, like, I feel like whenever the rains come, you know, a month or so later, the mountains look really green.
Yeah.
And so they kind of are changing anyway, of, like, greenness to dryness. By the end of the summer, it's really dry and brown.
Well, it just rained a lot here. Have you noticed anything?
Yeah, I haven't seen. It was very clear and pretty the other day, but, like, I can't tell what tree. It was like, oh, that chunk of forest is gone. Not like, I'm not able to.
That's the thing, but I think all of this stuff is, I think most of that, those bushes are like, what's left? I think yesterday just, I don't know.
I mean, that's the Eden Canyon.
I gotta find, like, photos or something. I don't know. But
before and after the mountains.
Yeah, just because I don't have a really good memory. I just drove through, you know, like, where Kunk lived and stuff.
Yeah.
Have you been there recently?
Yeah, it's insane.
Like,
it's still grazing.
They've taken out, like, most of
rubble.
The rubble, yeah. So where there's intact bits of yard, those are still there. Where the yard was damaged, those pieces of the yard are removed, and it's all, like, dirt locks and, like, patches of, like, pieces of, like, little, like, I don't know, like a bird bath or something. You know, it's really, really surreal.
Wow, Gav.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I haven't been up there in a couple of months, but I've driven through a number of times, and it really is. And it's, yeah,
it's trippy, dude.
The difference between that and like four blocks away is just huge.
Yeah.
Normal suburbia and then a war zone.
Yeah.
Only chimneys standing.
Only chimneys of the
building. Only chimneys of the building. That's exactly what Altadena was like.
Nah. I was just trying to think of... I was trying to come up with ideas so that I could write. But I don't. I don't know. Well, just suck. Everything I come up with just sucks. I was thinking about saying one, but it's just so stupid. But I had the idea of just like, it's like a version, it's like a guy that's kind of like me, but he's just like homeless, and he just kind of goes around, and he just puts up with stuff, and then he kind of like is like, I don't know, man. He helps people a little bit. But he's kind of just like, he's put into weird situations.
Is it like an anthology series?
I don't know.
Right, or like each episode, he like, you know, is crashing on somebody else's couch, or he's,
I think it's kind of like that, yeah.
Wondering.
That's maybe a bit more, like, I think he does, I don't know if he's crashing on people's couches necessarily, but I think he does have, like, multiple people that are more like, oh, they're more helpful or whatever. But I think a lot of it is just like he's just it's maybe a bit like Curb Your Enthusiasm, where he's just there. It's suddenly people like are expecting him to like assist with some effort. It's like, I don't know, man. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I guess that is a show that's an example of like this character doesn't really want anything or necessarily or to do anything.
Well, he usually wants out.
He wants out. Yeah.
Or he has an opinion that causes, like, he wants to be earnest about something in a way that would cause him problems to be.
Yeah.
Or already has caused. Like, sometimes it's like, I don't want to cause problems, but I want to be difficult. And sometimes it's, I have already dropped the ball and now I have to put it back together, you know?
And sometimes it's like, unintentionally, I have come off as a weirdo.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't know. I was just imagining someone that just kind of looks like a bit like me, but like shittier, you know, and wearing like shorts and like this red flannel and like an old beat up like Santa hat, you know?
Yep.
And it's just like, I don't know.
He's going around. He's dealing with the interactions of the world.
Yeah, it could be like Spencer for Hire, but like not that one. Like, I don't know what Spencer for Hire was.
Me either. I've heard it.
People call me at work. People call me Spencer for Hire.
Well, I guess you were. You are. Let me look. What is it?
Me and, you know, work. So.
Oh, yeah.
You've worked in production.
Yes,
and you've worked out of production. But I don't know. Maybe you have experienced this super recently. But, like, normies in the workplace have the worst fucking sense of humor.
Oh,
at all near entertainment in your life.
This is totally the experience I have, yes.
It sucks.
It's really shocking, honestly.
It sucks so bad. I hate it.
It can be difficult to adjust to.
It's one thing to hear it, and it's, like, fine to listen to it. And, like, I rarely laugh, but I don't laugh a lot anyway, you know? I don't know. But it's another thing to have to, like, stomach the indignity of other people finding it funny. And it's like, what the fuck am I doing? And it's like, I guess this is, like, well, how will this play in middle America kind of logic or something? Because it's like, these people, they think the worst fucking horse shit is funny. They think, like, 65-year-olds... like, I don't know, like, acting like children. I don't know.
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. It's really hard to pin down. There's, like, a badness to the concept that they're doing and that they... It's also, like, why would anybody find this funny? Sometimes I think people are just doing... like, they get in their heads, like robots. When this happens, I say this.
Oh, yeah, that's... this one guy, he's almost like Robin Williams or something. Like, he's always popping off, and he has this kind of bit style where he's like, you know, when that happens, I go like this. But he's just ad-libbing. But he's posing everything as if, like, he has these common go-tos in situations. Uh-huh. And people are like, that's amazing. But if anyone ever, like, follows up, it's like, he just, like, he was free associating. But the way he delivers it is, like, in this thing of, that's what we call the old 1-2, or, you know, like... Yeah. Like, but he's just like, he's going, he's always like that. And people either find him the most infuriating or like really funny. Yeah. And he's not really either. It's just like, I guess it's honestly more his like energy, which is kind of fun. But like what he's saying most of the time, like, is either like, banal or sucks.
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean. Well, and yeah, there's a level of, I guess the term is basic,
yeah,
out there that, like, yeah, is just unfathomable.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, aren't you sick of you? Or, like, aren't you, like, don't you, are you sick of this and want to do the next iteration on the thing you're saying?
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'll hear myself and I'm like, wow, I'm using that word a lot. Mm-hmm. I should really change that.
Right.
I'm not like, I should not, it just feels good to say that word. I should do more of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm annoying myself.
Yeah, exactly.
But
my job is funny because, like,
I also listen to myself talk all the time.
Oh, editing. Yeah, that's your job. So it's to listen, like, to yourself talk. Yeah, it's hard to not be hyper-conscious of the way you speak.
Exactly.
Yeah, I get that to an extent. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, yeah, no, I do that a lot, and I do it when I'm writing. Not like writing, but when I'm posting online, to be honest. Because it's like, how is this going to come across and stuff? It's a mess. One of the weird things about my work, though, or interesting things, is that, like, everybody has, like, the same complaints in the job, even about other people, but everybody has them, you know? Mm-hmm. Which is, it's funny because it's really easy to, like, you know, get anyone on your side. And there's a lot of old people, and they're often in, like, a bad mood or something, so it's like, it's sometimes, like, you just be like, you know, they're coming in, they're cussing or something, and you're being like, well, you know, what about these, the gas stations down at the yard or whatever, you know, and they're like, you tell me, you know, I don't know, you know, but there's just, I don't know.
Older people will also make, like, an assumption that you have the same sense of humor as them.
Oh, it sucks. I hate it.
Dude, there was one that happened at Disney World with the family that, like, it bothered me so much, but, like,
oh,
because this old guy just made a really inappropriate joke, and I don't think I get why he thought it could have been funny, but it just sucks. And
so, just imagining the old guy being like, I was being ironic.
Like, yeah. So my niece, who's six, we were in the, like, monorail, and she was, like, full of energy and kind of, like, hanging off of, like, you know, the pole that you hang on to and, like, swinging around it and stuff. And, like a little kid would. And this, like, old man in a one of those scooter things was like, oh, you don't want her to spend too much time on that. Or something to that effect that evokes that idea of this six-year-old stripping.
Yeah, that's...
Because, you see, there was a pole. Okay. And the girl was on the pole. And that's a thing to say to somebody.
How old is this child?
Six.
Six, yeah, that's...
Elizabeth, that just, like,
notice?
Jumping up and down.
Is she noticing?
She didn't notice this.
When I was a kid, I don't know how old I was.
He said it to me and my brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, we just went like, ha. Literally the sound I made. It was that. It was like, I was clear I did not appreciate it.
I was maybe like, I don't know, maybe 10. I don't know how old I was. 8? I don't know. I was at a carnival and I won a stuffed monkey from like a game, and the carny was like an old lady. And I was leading, and I was like, thank you, or whatever. And she was like, hey, why don't you bring that monkey into my jungle? And I was like, I don't know what that means, but I know, like, something adult and uncomfortable is being, like,
said. Oh, you're like, it's not, I know what it isn't, and that's the words she used.
Exactly. And it made me, like, and it was really gross, and it's, like, a thing I think, like, have thought about a lot my whole life.
What a weird thing to say.
I was like,
a stuffed animal. Yeah.
And I don't know. I don't think... I mean, I gotta imagine me at 7 was not sexually compelling to this old lady. So I gotta imagine she was just horsing around,
I think so.
And, but so, like, her horsing around is, like... I don't know. It really has, like, followed me. I'm not going to say it's haunted me. But, like, I do think when I am talking to people I don't know super well, I do think, like, I think I'm maybe more uncomfortable with flirting and stuff like that because, like, I don't want to come off as, like, this weird fucking person who's making people uncomfortable.
Right.
And, like, so I'm constantly casting everything I'm doing in a light of this could potentially come off weird to someone.
Yep.
And I think that can make me look really uncomfortable and not natural to people, you know? But it's, like, it's all in service of, like, not trying to make women feel
weird, not be weird
because yeah. I have been made deeply uncomfortable, you know, at a very young age.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's weird about that, like, it's specifically a person in that position was just watching, there's a new Defunct Land video.
That's Disneyland, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
people have been talking about it. It was like, this is just a cultural thing that, like, people are doing. I mean, I know you're into YouTube, but people are just watching, like, a three-hour Defunct Land these days.
Yeah, it's, like, all about, like, the history of, like, Zen, you know, shit.
It seems really interesting, to be sure. It's just, like, I didn't know this is, like, a thing.
I'd seen some of the videos before. Usually they're more like a half hour on, like, some failed theme park. It's pretty interesting stuff,
for the most part.
But, like, this one is, like, about the living characters or something. And there's, like, a part where he's talking about the number of times where it's kind of the situation where, like, actors who are being Disney characters need to be, you know, funny or cool in a unique situation with a family where they're being weird. And, like, 90%+ of the time, the performer's instinct is to, like, be like, ah, like, make a joke about dating somebody or, like, he kept showing these clips, and then the Defunct Land guy would come and be like, why are they all like this? Like, why do they all do this? And they're these unbelievably uncomfortable, like, attempts at slightly older humor that, like, is winking at the adults, but, like, is actually just uncomfortable because these are not professional writers. These are, like, performers who have been hired to be in a costume, and they need to, like, make things not weird, so they make it extra weird.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of it's, like, the democratization. You know, these are people who don't know.
Like, the go-to thing here is to be, like, to make it a, yeah, like, it, like, you know, bring that monkey into my jungle, and you're just what is going on?
They're just, like, grasping at straws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of footage of that I just saw.
I mean, also, I don't know. Part of my job is we meet other drivers. We, like, link up from drivers from other places sometimes. And so I met this guy who was from somewhere else, and he was, like, saying that he used to, like, work as a building architect. Not architect. I don't know. At first, it sounded like he was saying he was an architect. And then he was, like, he's, like, a building insurance manager or something like that. Basically, his job is, like, to, like, protect the money, like, and it's like, oh, so you're, like, a fucking parasite, like, you're, like, the least interesting part of the whole, like, building operation, like, but at first it sounded pretty interesting, and then he was talking about how he had started making YouTube videos, and I was talking about how, you know, I had worked in entertainment and stuff. I usually kind of really come in under the radar with, like, oh, I was an assistant and stuff, but, you know, he was like, I make all these YouTube videos, and I what do you know to make them about? And I was like, I need to, like, I didn't, like, say it, but I was having this internal process, like, you want to make the, what do you mean, what do you want to make them about? Like, and he was like, I was like, well, you can make them, like, about buildings and stuff. And I don't know, like, I was trying to, but it's just, so this is a guy who's old, who's trying to find a hobby. And I think, like, he was like, oh, I guess I could make videos.
Right.
So now he's doing that because that exists the same way, like, a model tray set exists.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so now he's like, but he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing, you know? Like, I mean, and not to say his videos are good or bad, but, you know, so I think...
Well, I imagine he's not staking his life on it succeeding.
I hope not. Which is, like, it's not like we don't have the idea. Like, it's not like we're not, like, what do we do? But at the same time, it's, like, such a different access point was just someone who's just like, oh, well, this is, like, something I could do.
Yeah, no, the perspective of, like, I want to make videos, not, like, there's stuff I want to say. And the only way I can do that is through videos.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. That's weird.
It's, I mean, which is, I don't know. It was cool. It was interesting talking to him. It's interesting talking to people.
Well, going back to the thing about, like, not wanting women to think that you're a creep.
Oh, yeah.
That was something that, like, I really struggled with through a lot of my life. And I think it caused me to have, like, unbelievable problems with confidence.
Sure.
And self-confidence. And just, like, I would never be too afraid to make a move. And it would be, like, a situation where I'd look back on it and be like, oh, it was actually really inappropriate that I didn't. You know, or it was like...
Right, exactly. Exactly. That was the faux pas.
Right.
Like, you probably made them feel really weird.
Right, because I was, like, too afraid of... And I think when people talk about, like, the male loneliness epidemic and kids today, guys, like, being afraid of saying the wrong stuff because of this climate, I'm like, I was... That's how I grew up. I, like, felt that.
Right.
Inherently.
Yeah.
And I don't think it is a good thing, but it is, like, part of... You know, I don't know, growing and I hesitate to say maturing because it's like, I feel like I got lucky at one point. And when I was around 30, I got into a relationship that like gave me some self-confidence and it changed my understanding of how to interact with women in a way where I now do know like I'm not going to do something that's truly awful. Like, I'm not going, you know, I could wind up accidentally doing that, but like,
you feel like it allowed you to present yourself as more of an equal as opposed to like someone who is necessarily inferior by way of your like,
yeah. And I think situation. It was like a thought that would like float around those issues was yeah. like, and women only are like, they give out sex like a gift, they don't really want it themselves,
right?
You know, yeah. And it's like, that's not the case.
Yeah, exactly.
They also want sex.
Well, so that's the thing. I don't know,
it's complicated.
Do you remember there's that, I mean maybe it was only on Blue Sky or whatever, but there's that hubbub a while back where there's this guy saying there needs to be more like left-wing dating advice or something. Do you remember that?
I missed that, but
it was a while. Yeah, I feel like that was a Blue Sky. The things that Blue Sky gets mad about are very different. And also,
I pop in there a lot, and yeah, I've noticed.
Yeah, it's wild.
Well, something that I feel every time I open Blue Sky is what you're talking about with the coworkers, where like I constantly see bits.
Oh, yeah.
I'll see bits on Twitter where I'm like, this is definitely a bot trying to do interaction. And then I'll see like a post on Blue Sky, and I'll be like, this is definitely a person. With a bad sense of humor.
All the best posters are on Blue Sky. I mean, there's absolute bangers and stuff.
There's but that too, yeah.
It's constant. I mean, follow some of
that. Yeah, that's it. My problem is I want to be in the For You tab in Blue Sky. And, like, I want to, like, see stuff outside of the people I follow. And, like, everything it shows me is the lamest shit I've ever seen.
Yeah, no, you need real...
I just need to curate it better.
But... This guy wrote this like Substack or whatever, and everyone got really mad. Which whatever.
What were they mad about? Like the fact that.
I think the idea was that it was kind of tawdry. They were mad about the idea that it was maybe a bit tawdry to try and cheapen leftism by saying you could make leftist dating tips. Like, okay. Oh, you can just, it's like, you don't Rotify understand the, like the theory of like, we don't have to understand like feminist struggle worldwide. You know, it's just like, you'll get laid if you do
these tricks.
But the thing is, the article wasn't about that, which is fine. You know, whatever. All of this to say, the one thing that I do think was pretty unimpeachable in the article, you know, say what you will about the rest of it, was that, like, whatever happens, it seems like there's a paradigm that we need to like look at, which is people put their own value judgments in other people responding to them. And it's like, it just isn't about you. Like, if you have brown eyes and the person you like likes someone with blue eyes, that's not you being a bad person,
right?
Like, and so if your takeaway, if your natural takeaway, or if culture is pushing you to the takeaway is ever like, this is because this has to do with your inadequacy. Rejection means inadequacy, as opposed to rejection means like the other person. You know, it's just all of a way to try and rationalize why other people might do something that doesn't fit with what you want. You know, like,
And so, like, so much just gets put up into, like, how we could form our judgment. It's like, we got to decouple that, you know, because, like, imagine how much healthier self-esteem could be if, like, early on, it's like, it's not about me.
Right.
Like, imagine a little kid, you know, like, your cousins being like, hey, well, this isn't about me, huh? Like, because that does, you know, you talk about your cousins and stuff, or not your, whatever, your relatives, let's just say. I don't know. It's people can be weird about their family on, you know, I don't want to blow up anyone's spot, you know, with their relatives on podcast people. But, you know, people seem to be pretty proud with, like, their development as humans, right? You know, so it wouldn't be too hard to imagine them being like, hey, man, shit happens.
Yeah.
And it's like that could be a very common thing that children could be espousing, you know, like, I don't know.
Well, and yeah, it's like there are some people who I know who I really like and respect, but I don't really want to hang out with, or maybe I, you know, am just like, I'm fine with hanging out with this person, but it's not like somebody I'm trying to, like, reach out to be spending more time with, because it's like, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just like, they are not the type of conversationalist that I want to gravitate towards. And there's nothing wrong with, like, it's not like I think lowly of them. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just like, I'm not going to pursue a friendship with this person, even though it's like, oh, this, like, you know, just because I don't have a problem with them.
Yeah.
I have to actually like somebody. I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Well, I mean, you only have so much effort.
Yeah.
And obviously, we could all put more effort into our personal relationships, and if, like, generally. But at the same time, it's like, you can't invite everyone all the time to everything. You know, you pick and choose. There's definitely people where I'm like, man, and you feel bad about it, and I'm sure this is a bad person thing, but there's definitely people, I wouldn't even say they're in my life anymore, but for a long time, there have been people where it's like, well, they could put in the effort. Like, I'm not going to fuck it. And then there's people I am like, and I would be fully willing to believe a lot of my priorities in those situations are way off.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, so I am exactly. Not putting in every instant.
Exactly.
You know, but, oh.
Yeah, it's just funny how, like, I feel like opinions keep being forced in every arena into a black and white thing of like, oh, so you like pancakes, you must hate waffles, you know, it's like that kind of a thing. And it's like, no, it's not like I don't like this person.
Yeah.
I'm not excited to go talk to them about anything.
You know,
I don't really want to keep, I don't care about their opinions.
You know who's bad at handling subtlety and nuance?
Everybody.
Emotionally immature people.
Well, guess what we have a generation of?
I know. This is like a whole, this is my whole crusade, man. Like, yeah. It's like the kind of thing where it's like, I mean, I'm delusional, don't get me wrong, I would say, but it's like the kind of thing where it's like, I wonder if I could be like the Jesus of like emotionally immature parents. Like, can I start like some like movement and get like crucified or something, like,
for being a good
parent? Because like, I do think it is like a world changing revolutionary movement that, like, and again, you know me, I paint with a very broad brush. I don't think it could solve everything. But, like, if we started from a foundation of this, like, it would be very, very good.
Well, you know? Honestly, I feel like spending a bunch of time with my brother and his kids, I'm sure I'm fully biased, but I'm watching a lot of the philosophy that he has taken into raising the kid and the school that she goes to, and I'm like, this kid is being given the tools, like, right. The good tools, right. That, yeah, we talk, exactly. About.
Yes.
Which I feel like is not happening, you know, countrywide. And in fact, it just feels like the opposite is happening, as like AI is coming around to stop you from even thinking unique thoughts for yourself or and having other friends to talk to.
Right. But they go to like a nice school that has like these.
They go to the absolute pinnacle of LA progressive, you know, school in 2025. Why isn't everything like this?
Yeah,
like, shouldn't be for only like Jordan Peele's family.
But not just LA progressive, but like hopefully, you know, at least close to the state of the art of the science of child psychology.
Right. Yes. Yeah. I do think that they are.
But which, like, of course, is our politics. But
the difference between that and you know, what it seems like is going on, particularly in, I think, their approach to technology in the classroom, like where so many places are like, you know, throw some tablets at the kids and, you know, make them. And it's like a lot of this is so much of the school's philosophy is like, to be okay with not having a screen at all times, of being able to, you know, like he was describing, my brother was describing going in for like reading hour, and he walked in and it was like the most peaceful room he had been in like 10 years. And he was like, is it like, and the teacher was like, this is what it's like every time. Like it's a, they're spending time connecting with spending time connecting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, they, and it's stuff that, like, we're being trained out of by our phones, too, as adults.
Oh, for sure.
So I just feel like a dumbass all the time.
Oh, we are.
And I feel like everything's getting worse, except I go to the school, and I'm like, wow, they seem to be, like, I went for this grandparents and special friends day thing, because I'm the uncle special friend, and, like, it was really raining that day, and so they had to kind of change what the performance that the kids were gonna do. They were gonna do it indoors, but they were gonna do it twice and like swap the people in groups and stuff, and like they were, while presenting it, making it clear that this was being used as a teaching opportunity for the kids about flexibility and understanding that like sometimes things don't go according to plan, but you got to be able to make a change and do that in a positive way. And like it was like, oh, even just the fact that it's raining today is being turned into a valuable lesson for the kids. I don't know. I'm over.
That's teacher quality, you know?
Yeah, that's the other thing. It's just teacher's quality. I don't interact much with elementary school, so maybe this is happening more often than I know.
No wonder. I mean, probably not.
Well, but the couple of friends that I have who are teachers, and I think they're teachers of more like middle and high school age kids, are like losing their minds because each new like class, they are less able to focus and it's more frustrating to try to teach and more poisoned by their phones one way or another. And that it's very depressing for them.
Sure.
The teachers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard them talk about, like, how much of a struggle it is to not let the really shitty kid who's, like, ruining your day have you transfer that to any of the other kids who are not that way.
Right.
And it's, like, a struggle.
Well, that's the thing. It's, like, even if we are inventing new tools to, like, build better kids or whatever, it's, like, but then society still has to ruin them.
Right.
Like, I was just thinking about like that could be, this is like one of my famous movie pitches, but you call it The Ruining. It's just like a Stephen King novel where like, I don't know, like every year at like 16, you know, like every person has to be ruined by society before you're like allowed to like grow up or whatever. And it just is a different, it's like a bunch of different, like, horrifying, you know,
ways that
incidents,
yeah,
you know, that just random ones. But then, you know, and it's like, well, why do we got to do this? And it was like, what are you talking about? We ruin everybody. Like, that's a society that we ruin people.
Well, that was, my brother was talking about how it seems like in a lot of places, there's like this attitude of you either get discipline and you beat the creativity out of the child, metaphorically, or you get like creative craziness, but like no discipline, and discipline meaning more like understanding how to behave in a certain circumstance, not meaning like punishment.
Yeah.
And like what he's impressed by at the school is their ability to teach the kids both things at once. Like she's still wild and crazy and very creative, and her imagination is really, really intact and active. But also, I was telling you, like at Disney World, when we showed up at the life-size chess game and other people were playing it, like her response was like, oh, well, we'll have to wait. Let's go sit over here. Like, it was just like,
yeah,
not like, well, I want to play it now or anything like that. It was like,
yeah,
oh, I'm prepared for a circumstance like this. I get it.
Which is fun. I mean,
you got killed by this.
Effect hits that poor impulse control and stuff anyway, too. But
right,
that's what's so notable about it.
Right.
And, you know, who knows? There's all these factors, I guess. But yeah, it seems. But, I mean, I don't know. It's just, like, what you're talking about is, like, oh, the discipline. Like, there's the more kind of discipline versus the art. Like, And similar, there's the kind of like, oh, a creative type versus like, oh, I'm a science type.
Right.
Or whatever. It's like, I think it's like, that's kind of indicative of more of a vibes based like approach to like child rearing, which is basically just like, I don't know, like Aristotelian philosophy where it's like, well, you see, we got this fire in our dicks. You know, and it's like, it's the eternal soul fire. And it's like, you gotta spread the fire. And then it combines with like water and it makes steam. And that's what air is, you know. And it's like, what are you fucking like, you know, and it's just like, yeah, it all is vibes. Like, but then science came around and it's like, well, no, creativity and science aren't like opposites.
They're actually very,
they're just two things. Yeah. You know, and it's like, and there is a way to like foster creativity without, you know, removing any concept of boundaries or misapprint,
you know, or like all those things that go along with it.
Yeah. So it's like, but again, it's like, now this is like more of a scientific kind of measured, like understand a more holistic understanding of like what makes this stuff tick and not just like some guy being like, well, I'm a white guy in the 20s and we got to put all these women in a cage and take out their brains. You know, like,
he was onto something.
Well, you know, he got a lot of money.
He got a lot of
flight. He did.
Yeah. But yeah, I just feel like I see emotional immaturity everywhere and growing at more in adults, though, than anything.
Uh-huh.
But I also, those are the only kids I'm interacting with.
Yeah. But I mean, I think that's the thing. I mean, you know, you could talk about lead poison. You could talk about, but I mean, I think it's just, I do think our conservative society creates the conditions itself, if not encouraging the parents to create the conditions of emotional maturity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think if you think about society as being a hierarchical structure, you could think of the top of that structure as being parental, or at least hijacking parental archetypes to set themselves up as the caregiver and the supplier, that they can then create emotional enmeshment instead of a true emotional relationship, because they can then leverage that emotional enmeshment to energize, you know, the masses, which is arguably what those people do. You know, in what do they call it? Like despots. It's not despots. You know, it's that word I always forget.
Demagoguery.
You know, it's they did it in Rome. God damn it. I'm gonna lose
empire.
It's the thing. It's like hate mongering, but it's a thing where you like, you know, you're like, you're fascistly kind of like populist, kind of like invoking the ire of the people, you know?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember the word.
I'll just like cut it in later.
Demagoguery.
But yeah, like, it's that thing. I think you could argue that thing, whatever that word is that I can't think of, this would be so good if I actually had the word.
Demagoguery.
Is like the art of creating like emotional enmeshment with the masses, because then you can control them by being like a strong personality, which is similar to what a cult is, which is similar to like an abusive relationship. Like, I think all this stuff is like, it's all tied together with like emotional immaturity and an inability to handle like kind of tough situations and not getting what you want, you know?
Well, yeah, I do think that like, it's also, you know, we're affected by what we inherently feel society supports, like whether it
says
that it does or not. For example, you know, we obviously love violence. That's a thing in America. We don't want to say that, but we, obviously, society supports violence. They support sex. And they hate sex, you know, and it hates women.
Yep.
Like, all these things are kind of inherent. And then you have this idea that, like, inherent into the society is, like, whoever we chose to be president reflects our values and our desires and what we think is good. And there's also no way to not be affected by the fact that you live in a place where the head of the country is acting a certain way, and that trickles down to everybody in terms of how you approach the world, because it's how you're being told society is okay with approaching the world.
Yeah, you know,
everybody voted for this.
You know what's interesting is like, you see all the people getting mad and then about a headline and people being like, no, but if you actually read the article, it's like the article's about something different. And then it's like, well, why'd you make the fucking headline then? And it's like, the president is like the headline. And it's like, you can make a credible argument that it's like, that's not what it's about. And it's like, well, right. Why is that the headline then?
Yeah, exactly. Why is that the guy leading the country and being like, it's also an ideal, the position. Like, it's meant to be something that is idealistic.
It's a thesis statement.
Yeah. And, you know, living for this many years under that thesis statement, like, it really, I do think that, you know, COVID and the algorithms and everything are all to blame, but like, because he's more of a symptom of those problems than, but like, it's a symptom that like makes the whole disease so much worse.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, with HIV AIDS, any
heard of it?
Any opportunistic infection can get you, and it's like,
right,
well, you wouldn't be sick off of this,
right,
if you weren't like,
if you weren't
so fucked up.
Yeah, exactly.
You have to be so fucked up
to get this.
Yeah, before you even catch this.
Yeah, that's how it feels.
I know. Or who knows? So, you see, I watched the first two episodes of Pluribus.
Oh yeah,
Pluribus. I call it Pluribus.
I call it the Plurib.
There's that scene early on in the season. Yeah, the Plurib. There's a scene early on where they're swiping their mouth with Q-tips and handing them across the aisle. They're making like an assembling line to
virusize.
Yeah, what do you call it? They're culturing?
They put them in like bacteria culture tins, like those petri dishes.
What do you call that? Incubating?
When you're growing,
you're incubating a culture, maybe?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. And I'm like, buddy, lick the petri dish. You do not have to get, you don't have to reach across the table.
That's
to
a good get point.
I was kind of like, what the fuck?
Lick the petri dish.
Look, you can have them both licking the petri dish.
She's in wool. Then she licks. Yeah, it does look cooler the way they were doing it because that's like the scientific method of doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that would work. That scientific
method totally would work. It totally would. But then it would undercut her licking the donuts.
Right, yeah. Then it would be a different thing.
Same action.
Yeah, it would be less. That makes it more of a visual escalation. That's
good. Yeah,
that's
yeah. Good. So I do think that, like, yeah, but you're right. They could have just licked the dish.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. I don't know. It looks good. I only got two episodes in, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm still pretty early. I think I haven't watched one, but I'm digging it.
I also fucking, go ahead.
Just the way that it opened when we got the, you know.
I'll save who I was fucking for later. Go ahead.
You know, like, the way that we got that signal and then we realized it was a DNA sequence, my thought was, like, we would totally fall for this. Like, there's no way we would not create this thing.
Yeah.
It's just, like, once we got that signal, it would just be, like, countdown until we do this.
Yeah.
So who are you fucking?
So I'm fucking him. I'm fucking Jeff Davis. And I mean fucking him.
And you mean fucking him.
No, I beat Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, finally.
Oh yeah. I heard you talk a little bit about the fucking finale.
Yeah. I was actually kind of surprised that I liked it.
I was surprised that you liked it. You did seem to feel a little bit the way I feel about it, which is like,
I mean, I get it.
Yeah, you get it is what I sensed. Why it's not something everybody likes.
Sure, yeah.
Because it just comes down to, for me, like, intriguing is not the same as confusing.
Yeah.
And intriguing is not what I felt when they were doing most of the stuff with the parallel universe shit.
Oh, for sure.
I felt like I was being, like, confused, and then...
Yeah, deliberately obfusked?
Yes.
Obfusked. What about obfusked?
Being deliberately obfusked, and I didn't like it. And then it was also like, okay, I understand that it's a famous moment in video gaming history, but... There's a reason it's a famous moment.
Sure, yeah.
Because it happened and is powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
And to me, one of the things that it said about death in the original is it's unexpected sometimes, it's permanent, and it's irrevocable. And that is something that you have to learn to live with as a person. Like, that is the reality of death.
And
the reality of death is not like that
mild.
Right. It's not. It's severe and as scary and awful. And then you have to live with it.
Right.
And this is like, but what if in other worlds it was different? And I'm like, that doesn't excite me or make me feel more emotions. Makes me feel less emotions and thinks this is stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, sure. In every way, it felt like by doing what they did, they made this amazing thing that they had, which if they were to just do, I think would resonate. And I think that everybody would have been surprised that they just did it again. So it's like, if you're worried about that. But as Ryan pointed out, he's like, yeah, but in this way, they got everybody on YouTube to make endless media about it, continuously promoting the project over and over. And I was like, I can't argue with that.
But that's not what they wanted.
I don't know what they wanted, because I cannot understand being that close to that story.
That's like that America. Japan doesn't think like that.
That's the thing. I don't know.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting, because I do think when you're talking about the Aerith scene, I think that you can buy what I'm about to say. I think you can buy this with the Aerith scene. But for the whole series, I do think like the extreme violence of Seven original is hard to imagine realizing at this level of fidelity without vastly changing how a lot of it feels to be like palling around in like under Shinra's nose and to be fighting with swords and guns and stuff. Like, because like, you know, you talk about the Dine scene, right? Like, it's a huge deflation that you're not seeing like blood everywhere in the gold saucer, right? Like, right. That's what you see. But at the same time, like, it would, like, again, maybe it could work. I don't even know that they tried it and decided it didn't work. I don't think they did, if I had to guess, but I think early on they must have made a decision about like how to depict violence and stuff. And then
they wanted it to be softer.
Yeah. Although I'm sure they have more to it than they just let's soften this. They also were going for this other theme.
Well, most of the complaints I have about the game are ways that they softened it.
Right. Right.
Like Sid as a character. Mm-hmm. He's not at all the Sid that I understood him to be from FF7.
Well, he's just like there. Like, he's not like, he's just a different guy.
He's just kind of like, ah, you know, you win some, you lose some. But in the first one, you meet him and he's like a person who had like really grown
we'll get that in the third
over the fact that like he didn't achieve his life goals and was lied to by Shinra.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, if we never get anything from Sid, sure. But because, yeah, I agree. Like, because in this game, Sid functions like talking to an in.
Yeah, NPC. Like, and I think that they could have indicated his character better in this while still reserving the whole Rocket Town and storyline for later. He's just like not really surly. He's not smoking a cigarette, right? Like,
no, he's just, you know, background.
It's a lot of those decisions of like, you know, maybe Sid shouldn't smoke, or, you know, maybe Aerith shouldn't really die. Not as hardcore as it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, you're talking about changing the most iconic moment in video games. Do you think that maybe part of why it was so iconic is because of the way it was done?
Yeah, but I think it's like, yeah, I know, yeah. Wait, this one, okay. Sorry, folks. But yeah, I mean, I do just think that, like, that's the thing is, like, when it was happening, I was just kind of, like, resonating. It was just kind of working. Like, even the music at the end, like, when you hear the Aerith song brought back and stuff, I was like, this is, like, affecting me emotionally. And it is cool that, like, it's Cloud and Aerith fighting together, like, fighting Sephiroth and stuff. And I was like, this is really a cool experience. And I am, like, what the fuck is going to happen? You know, so I feel like if they wanted to set it up for her death to be softer, but ultimately final the same way, it's like, I don't feel like I know that's happening going into it. So I'm kind of like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen, you know? But at the same time, it does feel like you didn't get, like, that's the thing is that's what worked about in the old game is it's such a gut punch. And now it's not, but at the same time, I don't know. Can it still be a gut punch if you're expecting it like the whole game, you know?
I think yes.
Yeah.
I think it can, because I've rewatched a movie.
Sure. Yeah.
And I've found the same moment to be effective.
Yeah.
The second time. Like,
I wonder if the old 7 would work for me if I was watching it.
It worked the fuck for me when I played it for the first time in 2018.
Yeah.
Like, it really worked for me.
Right.
And this didn't. And part of that is I'm like, as somebody who thinks about storytelling, I am imagining a person experiencing this for the first time. What the fuck are they supposed to think? Because in my opinion, this only really works and only can even give that feeling if you really know FF7, like, really well.
I don't think you need to know that well, but it would be baffling for someone who has, like, never played Final Fantasy
VII. It would just be like, oh, I'm going to play the new Final Fantasy VII because I like modern games and I want to experience that story that I heard was, like, one of the greatest stories in the history of video games. And then you would play this and you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Why is this the most resonant thing in the history of video games? And if you played the original, it wasn't confusing. I understood immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
So in that way, I'm just like, it comes down to a thing of like, I have this belief that it should be a remake project, and that's what it is. And I don't know, they want to have it both ways.
But when
they seem to be effectively having it both ways. Of like, it's not a remake.
Yeah.
Now.
Well,
but I'm like, but all the same shit that happens in the original is going to happen. What is a remake if not something that happens the same basic idea but different?
Well, yeah, it's a different kind of remake. It's the kind of remake that they don't really do.
Well, when you remake, you know, The Mummy to be The Mummy from 1996, like, you know, like the old 1930s movie, like, it's still a guy goes and finds a mummy. Like, that's still what happens in the story. It's not, but it's done all differently.
Well, that's the thing, is that video game remake, I mean, I feel like we've talked about this ages ago, but video game...
I have
video,
this conversation all the time.
Yeah. But video game remakes are not done like film remakes, because film remakes are more of like an artistic reinterpretation, whereas that's video game remakes are almost always just like very crunchy re-deliveries of the same like digital assets.
Well, that's to me a remaster, which this term doesn't matter, but like... Yeah, I'm like, oh, you updated it for modern consoles, but it's the same game. It would be like releasing a movie on Blu-ray instead of...
But there can have been, like, remakes that, like, the ending is basically kind of the opposite of, like, the thing they're really...
Well, because they're usually, yeah, they want to do, like, a twist.
Right.
Like, a twist on the
ending. That's the same thing. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's what's not usually a part of video game endings.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Like, and so... And I mean, I think it's perfectly valid for that to work, but it's like, that's what's so interesting about it, is it's like, it's a very unique thing. I would be highly interested in hearing if anyone has any examples of other games that are a remake the way this game is a remake.
I think this is a new step.
It certainly seems like it. Yeah.
Well, because also the old way to remake games is you just called it a sequel.
Right.
It would be like, now it's Assassin's Creed 2. It's the exact same thing, just better with a different character.
Right, yeah, exactly.
But, like, effectively...
Well, it's not exactly... It's, but it's also, like, that's also kind of like how movies are a sequel, where it's like, we basically do the same thing.
But bigger and better.
You know?
Sometimes, yeah.
Like, and sometimes it's like we kind of are meta about the fact that it's like we're retreading, like, the first events of the, like...
Yeah. I just think when they inevitably one day... remake Empire Strikes Back, I think that they're gonna still have Vader turn out to be Luke's father.
Well, everyone got mad about all the changes Lucas made, you know, it's similar.
Yeah, but not that. Like,
no, I know.
You know, I don't think that he would, you know, like, Greedo shooting first is the changes he was making.
That's pretty big.
Huge compared to Luke, I am your father.
Oh, I'd say it's bigger.
Exactly. You know, I just don't think that they're going to make it so that, like, actually he's his uncle. Or, actually there are many parallel universes, and in some of them he wasn't Luke's dad.
Well, what if it turns out that, like, Darth Vader doesn't die, but he goes into another dimension?
Yeah, yep. This sounds like a good idea.
And Kylo Ren shows up.
Yep.
And he has, like, the old Darth Vader mask.
Yep, like he did. Yep.
Right. And then that that opens a portal, I think.
Yes, yes. This will be more resonant than finding out that Luke's dad was the bad guy.
And then
what you're describing will resonate better.
And then you'll be all like, holy shit, now is there going to be another Star Wars movie? And in that movie, will Darth Vader be alive or eventually come back to life?
But it's also that next movie is going to be effectively the events of Return of the Jedi.
Look, man, I don't know what to tell you. Kevin couldn't do the show. I wanted to drive around.
Hey, Kevin, can't do the show today.
The thing is, when Kevin blindsides me, when Kevin is blindsided, let's say, it's not his fault. When Kevin is blindsided by a show, a record changing issue, I could and should put out an episode. But instead, I'm like, hey, if Kevin doesn't do it, I'm good. It's his job. I'm off scot-free.
Yeah.
I was like, it doesn't really work like that. And I'm sorry to the audience. The episodes have been really not coming out very often lately. And that's not very episodes coming out very often lately of me.
No, it's not. I'll admit that.
But
it's still a consistent thing.
Yeah. Well, you got anything to plug?
Go listen to No Cat.
Yeah.
And
going through Final Fantasy III.
Yeah, we're Final Fantasy III.
Which seems like a great game.
It is really fun. It's a very... Well, we played the Pixel Remaster, so it's a real breeze.
Obviously, there seems to be elements in the earlier games that are, like, important. But Final Fantasy III is, like... This is how they figured out what Final Fantasy was.
It really is. Like, the first Final Fantasy feels like, what if Dungeons & Dragons was in the form of a video game?
Right.
And this is like, oh, this has all of the stuff that makes Final Fantasy Final Fantasy.
Yeah.
Actually fully realized. And you can see how, like, what they did after this was they were like, what if this had, like, a compelling story with a main character?
Yeah.
Because you're still just Heroes of Light in 3. And in 4, you actually are a guy named Cecil.
And you're really moving through it, and it's fun to listen to. I had this thought. I mean, maybe we could cut it out. Maybe we'll cut this out. But I was thinking, you know, like, you're talking about how easy it is, and it's like, and how it goes through. And it's like, I wonder how much of that is just like, yeah, if the game ruining stuff is cut out of the game, and you don't lose way too much progress because of punishing saves.
Uh-huh.
Like, maybe you end up having a lot less friction and play a lot less time.
Yeah.
You know? Well, just play the game a lot less.
That's the case, but there's definitely an element.
But the game itself is
part of the actual challenge of the original is gone.
Right.
In the Pixel Remaster. Because, like, anytime you walk into a secret tunnel, it will, like, highlight all of the secret tunnels that are on the screen. And I think that the final dungeon, in the original, it didn't highlight any of the other secret tunnels. So you weren't able to see where the secret tunnels were.
Right.
And it was, like, just filled with them, and that was the only way to get through them. And I think you would just have to push on every wall and just take forever. But because it's not that way, we just, yeah, never lose progress. And it's also just a whirlwind. Like, all the dungeons are really short.
Right.
They're, like, you know, 5 screens at most. It's not going to be, like, longer.
Yeah.
And so they kind of, like, you feel like you accomplished a task and you're moving on to a new task. Maybe too fast. But, like, the slog of the first two felt more like, nothing is happening. And in this, it was like, yeah, there's a town of ghosts. Now you've cured the ghosts. Now there's pirates. Oh, the pirates are in trouble. Now you fixed the pirates. Oh, this town's got many people. Yeah, you know, just...
Which is cool. Honestly, very cool.
It is. I like it.
I can imagine maybe if it came out here, people would be like, it's too short or something, getting really mad or something. But, like, it's like, yeah, that's, like, a cool... It's, like, just, like, imagine, like, a express version of Final Fantasy. That's a cool
idea. I think people would love 3 here, and they would have... You know, I mean, they obviously have access to it now.
Right, yeah.
But it is an interesting progression, the first 3. And by the 3rd one, they really had, like, arrived. And it was then time to, like, make it resonate deeply and emotionally. Because 4 is like a good story, but by 6 and 7, you're making the world cry.
Yeah, it's nuts. You're going nuts. And then by the time you're doing 7 Rebirth, then you're actually solving all the mistakes you made in the first.
Yeah. I also plug my brother's Blu-ray that's not out yet, and I'm not sure when it's going to come.
Hell.
But the movie Mystery Team is coming to Blu-ray.
Mystery Team. Jeff's brother.
God, I hope that's like...
Jeff's... You guys don't know this, but Jeff's brother is Donald Glover. But yeah, that's the Blu-ray's coming out. That's so crazy.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, speaking of your podcast again, I feel like you mentioned Dark Souls 2 and it's like Dark Souls 2 is fucking nuts, dude.
I really want to play it.
It's kind of awesome.
I hear polarizing things, but in a way where it's like, you can tell it's not like the people who defend FF8 or something. It's like, no, this one's different, but amazing. In its own way.
Yeah, I think it's kind of awesome. It's interesting in that, like, the bosses are basically all very not hard, but the levels in, like, the normal enemy fights are, like, very tough.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's how I felt with FF1, where, yeah. Like, we were unable to get through anything, and then we would kill a boss, like, first try.
Yeah. I mean, that's before they figured out, like, it counter rates and stuff. I mean... That's hard to tune. That's still stuff. Something I feel like modern games could kind of have.
Probably. I got to play Expedition 33.
Yeah.
Everybody's saying, Player Obscura. I do really want to play it.
Game of the year.
I think we'll probably do it on Patreon for like a bonus thing unedited.
That could be good. I think you got to do Saga Frontier.
That would be fun too.
When you do Saga Frontier, I should be sure. I should be pointing at him. Yelling at you.
Yeah.
The thing is, I basically will have to tell you where to go, but I have to not tell you everything all the time.
That would be... Actually, I think we should do that. That would be very fun.
And also, you guys got to do fucking... This is probably more obvious or whatever, but Bravely Default is so good. They just brought that out. They remade Bravely Default on the Switch. Was it for the Switch 2 or for both the Switch and the Switch 2? I think it was for both. But now that it's out on the Switch, it's...
I haven't heard. I really need to play that.
I mean, that's like when you talk about Final Fantasy 3, like Bravely Default is like that. It's like, it just feels like a very well polished Final Fantasy game before they started getting all big AAA, you know? And it's like, wow, it's compelling even in a modern fucking day package where Call of Duty exists, you know? But that's my thoughts on your podcast.
Oh, thanks for listening.
I listen, so you guys got it as well.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Yeah, but thanks for listening to me, guys. Thanks for supporting me. Thanks for being there for me.
Are you talking to me or the audience?
Because
I do listen to you.
I guess I was talking to the audience, which unfortunately and technically includes
you. Includes me. Yeah, yes. So in a way, you are talking to me.
Yeah.
If you listen to the show.
The more I think about it, the more, yes, unfortunately, I am talking to you as well. But yeah, we'll see. I wonder how listenable this is.
Yeah, I hope it is. I've enjoyed this conversation.
Yeah, it's good.
Thanks for having me on the pod.
Oh my God, we weren't recording.